Everything is on demand now. But there's something about that appointment watching of HBO that's still there.
It's also called the art of the tease, and that's how they get you.
I'm trying to think, what's my tease for tomorrow?
Kristen sets herself on fire. Tune in at 11:20, and then we'll tell you why.
Boom.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Welcome back to the noon hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, your host. She is Jane Matinere. And maternal mortality in the U.S., in Wisconsin, not great. Not great at all. It rose sharply. Maternal death rates rose sharply in 2021. And experts worry that the problem is only getting worse. And both in Wisconsin and nationally, Black mothers and babies face higher rates of morbidity and mortality than their white counterparts and have for a very long time. And so our next guests are two women who are working on that problem specifically in Milwaukee with a program called the Birth Outcomes Made Better, or BOM, doula program, which is part of Milwaukee's Department of Health. And so we are joined by Erica Olivier, who is the director of the department's Maternal and Child Health Division for the Milwaukee Health Department and program manager for the BOM doula program, Christina Drain. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Hello.
Hi. So I guess how would, since you're the program manager, Christina, let's start with how would you describe the BOM doula program?
Well, that's a good question. My first thought would be we're the BOM, right? So our program is awesome in the fact that we provide free doula services to anyone who lives in the city of Milwaukee. As long as you're a Milwaukee resident and you're less than 30 weeks pregnant, we're here to serve you. So I love the fact that our program does not take into consideration what type of insurance you have or your income or even your language. We are receptive to anyone who lives in the city of Milwaukee. And I think that we have a good dynamic in the team that we have that team, right? Because most people in our work of doula work don't have that backing, that support that we have within one another. So I think that's what makes us unique.
Christina, can you break, what does a doula do?
Okay, so a doula is a person who is there to support the birthing family because we're there for more than just mom. We are there to support them physically while they're actually in labor and delivery. We're there to support them spiritually and emotionally, and that happens prenatally, also while in labor and delivery, as well as postpartum. So that's a nice way to just sum us up into one.
And then, and this is maybe for Christina or Erica, what is the difference between a doula and a midwife? Because I think sometimes people confuse those two things.
Okay, so a doula is a non-medical professional. That's the easiest way to explain it. And the analogy that I typically use is a midwife is equivalent to like your medical provider, your OB. But us doulas are more so of that supportive, non-clinical, non-medical, so more so like a nurse. That's the analogy that I typically use to make it seem simple.
That makes sense. And so it's like, you're not necessarily the one delivering the baby versus a midwife would be delivering the baby versus you advocating for your client. Is that how you would refer to the people you work with?
Exactly. So yes, we are there to advocate and also translate because sometimes in the medical field, things can get misconstrued, misunderstood. You know, they talk in a little bit of a different language. So we're there to make sure that the family understands exactly what's happening. And be of support to them and the medical team, honestly.
Because that is a thing I have to imagine is the amount of, you don't know what you don't know. And especially if it's your first child, just the questions and how much to push back and what to ask. And so having someone who, you know, if you're a first time parent, whether you're doing it on your own or with a partner, not knowing what to even ask for. And so the advantage of having someone who's done it a lot, just because this is their job, and not always, and pushing back, because sometimes, you know, the medicalization of childbirth is a thing. And so in being in the hospital and people wanting to move you through the hospital, I'm sure there is sometimes the doula's best interest of trying to protect their client is a little different than hospital staff. Is that a fair assumption?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yep, we're there to help slow down. That's what we do a lot of the time, too. Slow down, make sure everything's understood. before moving forward. So yes, you're absolutely correct.
Awesome. So I guess with the BOM program, what are some of the objectives of the program since it started?
I could probably jump in on that one. So the program was launched in 2019. And to be very abundantly clear, it stemmed out of the fact that we declare racism a public health crisis in Milwaukee. So, you know, coming from that, it's really how do we do a good job of offering all options to birthing people, alternatives from, you know, typical, I'm using a lot of air quotes, westernized medicine that might not be a good fit. How do we really ensure that they have all the reproductive options? How do we make sure that they have accessible cares, resources, protections, understanding of their rights? How do we make sure that whatever those social determinants of health and what they look like in that family are really truly reflected and individualized? Because, you know, there's different levels of trauma, there's different levels of gaps in the community resources that we really try to be cognizant of, and particularly how does racism play into all of that? So, you know, that's like a really big way to summarize it. But, you know, any other pieces too, which I think makes the BOM program unique, we try to partner a lot more with the hospital systems and clinics and whatnot, and anybody that has hands on birthing people, honestly, to say, we're not your adversaries. How do we make, you know, kind of curb the myths of what, you know, a doula is in the eyes of, you know, your typical medical provider? Because honestly, we're partners and we're trying to be, and trying to say, like, there are gaps that exist. Clearly, infant mortality and maternal morbidity are showing us blaring statistics that Black babies are dying exponentially more. Black mothers are dying exponentially more. And there's something that you're not doing. And we know what our history in medicine, our history in society, in economics, in housing, in every space of a person's life is impacted by racism. And doulas have a very intricate knowledge of that, in addition to spirituality and culture and all these things. So, you know, we really honed in all of that and trying to do our best job to meet our clients where they really are at.
We're talking to Erica Olivier, Director of the Department of Maternal and Child Health Division of Milwaukee Health Department, and Program Manager of the BOM Doula Program, Christina Drain. And I guess, Erica, you just touched on it a little bit, but I feel like every couple months we see that stat, whether it's in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, or nationally, of how much more dangerous it is to be a Black mother. And being a white mother, I mean, being a mother in general right now for the resources that this country has is embarrassing. But even more embarrassing is what the health outcomes, the disparities between Black and white birthing mothers are. And so what, they probably could write an entire book on this, but as far as to make it kind of digestible for people who are listening right now, like what, why, what are the big things that contribute to those stats?
So the big continuous juggernaut, unfortunately, is racism in our country. You know, when we look at the history of Milwaukee specifically, just decisions that were made from government and legislation and policy had literally intentionally segregated Black people out of access to safe housing, safe foods, healthy foods, medical providers. I mean, we were experimented on in the eyes of gynecology, and like that mapped the roadmap of medical practice. Like thinking of like really how deeply rooted this is in our, you know, city, county, state, and country, it's really hard to unravel a lot of that. And I feel like there's so much more attention to it now, which is great. But we got a lot of work to do, because there's like the implicit and explicit situations that still continue on. And it's starting there of being honest, of saying, okay, where can we reevaluate? Where can we pivot? We need to just comb everything through with a fine-tooth comb, and like from policy, beliefs, values, structure, funding, like everything in the systems to really put a dent in this, because otherwise we'll be spinning our wheels. And I think, you know, with birth work, they're amazing and important and crucial in this space. And I know that it's not going to be like a gap filler per se, but it is a gap filler right now, more so than like a naturally integrated part of the medical system. And it's sad where I'm like, it shouldn't have to be that way. We shouldn't have to be in these spaces to save Black lives versus this is a form of, you know, birth work and a resource to families and birthing people. The other pieces too, there are just risk factors that come with different races, genders, ages, you know, demographics of sorts that we really just have to do a better job of paying attention to and looking at the person as a whole person and not just treating on an acute basis, where I'm like, if somebody's coming in and they are, you know, have we screened for how were they with their prenatal care? How are they smokers? Are they exposed to, you know, social stressors? We know domestic violence, mental health, substance abuse. What kind of birth control have they been offered or even aware of? Are they obese? Are they like, there's so many factors that we have to do a better job of like vetting out so that we can do the best job of really providing a comprehensive approach to care. And that's not just with birth work. That's everything.
That's everything. So, yeah. Well, I think about it, just how behind the ball medicine is, like for how long medical studies were only done on men. And how far behind we are with like women's medicine, because they were just like, oh, why would we include women in any of these studies? Why are they? They're the same, aren't they?
Why would we?
And shockingly, like we all have hearts. Yeah, I know. It's astonishing.
Yeah, it's astonishing. Yes. And so, well, we only have 2 minutes. So I want to quickly touch. We'll squeeze it in. And then if we have to answer the full question, we'll come back with it as well. But Christina, in the light of different programs that are being capped, whether we're talking about unemployment or Medicaid and like all these things you the criteria you have to fill or jobs you have to have, or you can't make too much money. Why was it important for this to be a program that's available to any Milwaukee resident?
I think that is really important. Just thinking of the middle class, right? Like statistically shown that Black women who go through these morbidity or mortality situations, their average income is $123,000 a year. So it has nothing to do with the fact that you are poor or yeah. that you are considered high, you know, like the 1% is the fact that you're Black. So I think that that's great that we take that into consideration. It's just to help everybody so that we're reaching anyone that we can reach and we're not leaving anyone out.
That's, yeah, and that's actually probably something that a lot of people would find surprising, that it's not a class thing. It is very much is a race thing right now. All right. Well, both Erica and Christina are going to be here when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Stay tuned.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we are talking to Erica Olivier, who is the Deputy Commissioner of Community Health and supports the oversight of the Maternal and Child Health Division at Milwaukee's Department of Health, and Program Manager for the BOM Doula Program, Christina Drain. And Christina, so since the program started in 2019, what have you learned? Like, what has evolved in the program, or what have you learned personally as far as how we can better attack this problem?
I honestly would have to say that it's a collaborative effort, right? That has been the most eye-opening to me, just because as a birth worker, traditionally, the mindset is that, you know, like we're more holistic, back to the roots of how things started, but also coming to the realization that a lot of our mothers are dealing with other medical issues that require that medical team. And then also just knowing that, you know, we aren't alone in this fight. Like, it's not just on the doulas. It's not just on healthcare. It's going to take a collaborative effort between all of us. So diving more into that is what I have done and what I've learned. That we need more.
Christina, do we need more doulas? Is there a doula school?
Is there a doula school? No, there isn't a doula school, but we definitely need more doulas. Doula trainings are what we take to, you know, get our certification. So we are encouraging more doulas to, because it's a lot of work and there's enough work for all of us to get it done. Erica, do you have anything else to add?
I would say I'm always going to say we need more doulas, definitely, because I mean, the biggest piece is we're offering it for free.
Yeah.
And we're really trying to make sure that anybody that would need it, because to your point, maternal child health is an issue in addition to the nuances in that, you know, population. And our program can't solve it all. And there are other, you know, agencies that have doulas right now and are trying to bud, you know, providers and organizations around it. But I mean, we need a village, for lack of a better term, to really surround as many birthing people as we have in Milwaukee. I mean, Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee alone, we have like 9,000 births a year. So
wow.
Keep that in mind of how many doulas we would need to really get in there on everybody. And the only thing is we need funding. We need there to be sustainable incomes for the doulas as well. Yeah. And that's another objective that I missed earlier, that it's important for us to be able to provide that for anybody that wants to be in birth work, and that this isn't treated like a second class profession or something that's just, you know, in addition to your full-time work. I'm like, no, come here, full-time job. You have benefits. You can provide for your own families in addition to supporting, you know, the community. So needing to do better at that across the city, county, state, and putting the money where your mouth is, because clearly our stats are telling us that it's a need.
Yeah. And what does doula training look like? Like, what does it all entail? Who, if someone's hearing this right now and is like, maybe I would be good at this, what kind of person is predispositioned to be good at doula-ing?
Yeah, anyone who's here for reproductive justice and advocating for women's health and, you know, just that beginning part of infant life. I don't think people realize that we are also a part of child welfare, because we're there to help make sure that this child is brought in on safe terms. Even that stress level impacts pregnancy and children. So as far as training goes, so there are different organizations that you can train throughout the state typically. It is a 2 to 3 day training that you take. You get all this information about how to support families in the labor and delivery. You get a history lesson. You also get like a breastfeeding class as well as a childbirth education class all into one. And then you're required to do readings and essays and attend a certain amount of births with different experiences in those births to show that you can, apply what you learned in the setting. And then you send all that information in and you are certified. So I know at the city, we are certified through Doula Organization of North America, which is also known as DONA. And then we also have certification through CAPA, which is the Childbirth Professional Association. And yeah, they both offer some great trainings, from birth doulas to postpartum to childbirth educators to newborn specialists, just giving you that full spectrum look at this process.
Which is probably also really important as far as we're also having less, because it's Wisconsin right now, less people who want to study and become an OBGYN right now. And so more people who can get this kind of training, I'm sure, is going to be very, very beneficial. So then my last question for both either of you, because I don't know, Erica, how many births you're there for, but Christina, it sounds like you're there for a lot. So is every birth special, or they start to seem the same after hundreds of them?
Never. It's never the same. It's always something different, something special, unique. And even when there's a situation that may be traumatic or, you know, disheartening or disappointing, there's still something unique and special and rewarding about just being, we're honored to be in that space with the family. So it's always something different every single time. And that's what brings the joy out of doing the work, right? You never know what you're going to get, but it's going to make you feel good when you're done with it, regardless.
And babies.
Yeah.
Babies. All right. So finally, where can people get more information about the program or about any other programs that is happening under Milwaukee's Health Department for Child and Maternal Health?
So specifically for our Bond Doula program, in addition to some of our other home visiting programs, we have a phone number that people can call if they're interested in services, want to learn more about it. So that's our central intake number, which is 414-286 8620. We also have a website that has all of our maternal child health related programs. And they can first just go to www.milwaukee.gov/health. And you'll see a part of that's maternal child health, along with all the other programs that we have in the health department.
All right. Well, we will link that to our show notes today on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen. Christina Drain, Erica Olivier, thank you so much for spending time with us. This program sounds incredible, and I'm so happy it's been successful so far.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Well, stay tuned when we come back. Dr. Ben Weston is going to be here to talk about opioid prevention or prevention strategies, harm reduction, and kind of where we're at with the settlement money that keeps coming in, but what programs is it being funneled into? So this is As Goes Wisconsin. Stay tuned.
Now, I can't tell you how many times that day I heard from all sorts of folks the word junkie. Now, I spent time learning about some of the folks who died over that weekend. One was a husband coming up on his 40th wedding anniversary. He was a father, a grandfather, and a dog lover. Another was a mother of two who owned and ran her own business. And another was a father of two who loved reading and cooking. These were sons and daughters, brothers, sisters, mothers, and fathers. They had friends, they had families, they had lives. Each had a different story, stories that told of families, of careers, of hobbies, and passions. So I don't know what the term junkie means. I'm not sure what it describes, but these were people. They're people like you, people like me, people that each of us knows in our own life, people that each of us have in our family and in our communities and among our friends. Overdoses can happen to anyone.
Wisconsin, I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And that was a video of our next guest, Milwaukee County Chief Health Policy Advisor, Dr. Ben Weston. And he's here to talk to us about opioid harm reduction, prevention strategies, and I think also just kind of trying to dissect the problem and take it out of the headlines and actually make it a little bit more real. So welcome to As Goes Wisconsin, Dr. Weston.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I loved that video. I think you had posted that right after there was a couple of weeks ago, there were 17 overdoses in Milwaukee alone. And I think it's maybe a good starting place because I have been fortunate enough that unlike so many people, I've not had opioids directly impact someone that I love, which is not the case for a lot of people. And it's not just a Milwaukee thing. It's not just a Wisconsin thing. This is a problem everywhere. But I do read a lot of news. And so I feel like there's, whether it's fentanyl or opioids, of stats for overdoses, but then there's also, now there's settlements coming down and trying to wrap our heads around what's working and where the money's going and stuff like that. So I thought that was like such a good video to start with that you posted because it does remind us that each time we hear one of these stories, it's actually a person, it's not a stat. And it's easy to kind of start thinking about it as stats because it is such a monumental problem. And so I guess we'll just start there as far as like where are we right now? Like money's coming in. There's a lot of programs getting developed to tackle this. How would you describe where we are right now when it comes to opioid crisis?
Yeah, I mean, money is coming in, but I think it's important to remember, as you said, this is a huge issue, and it's not a Milwaukee County issue. Nationally, we're seeing record-breaking numbers of opioid overdoses across the country. Now, in Milwaukee County, we're seeing this effect firsthand. You mentioned the 17 overdoses. That was in a 72-hour period, 17 people overdosed and died. And it's important to remember, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's all sorts of people who also overdosed and were saved. Yeah. They were saved by naloxone. They were saved by paramedics. They were saved in the hospital or by bystanders. And the trickle-down effect of each of those deaths, each of those overdoses, each of those near overdoses is impossible to measure, but we know that it has an immense effect on families and on communities.
And so with that, so earlier this year, I think, well, if we start talking about the money in the program. So earlier this year, David Crowley, county executive of Milwaukee, signed a resolution releasing $11 million for 15 different projects, one of which was like harm reduction vending machines, which sounds interesting. So of the 15 different projects, how many are there some that you're directly involved in?
Yeah, there's quite a few I'm directly involved in. So some of these are focusing upstream, some are focusing more downstream. That's sort of the way I kind of bifurcate the interventions here for opioid substance use disorder. But yeah, quite a few. So a lot is focused on harm reduction. So for example, we talked about naloxone. This is the nasal spray, the antidote to an opioid overdose. It reverses it immediately for somebody who's overdosed on opioids and keeps them breathing. So one of the things that opioids do is it decreases your brain's respiratory drive. Your brain tells your body to breathe. And that's why we don't have to think about breathing. We just do it. But when you take too much opioid, you stop breathing. And when you stop breathing, pretty quickly you die. And so naloxone can reverse that. Now, part of that funding is going toward making sure that all of our fire departments have naloxone available, not just for people who overdose. We've had that for a long time, but now you can knock on the door of a fire department, or you can walk up to an ambulance. Forget about calling 911. Just walk up to the ambulance and ask if you can have a harm reduction kit, and they'll hand one to you. No questions asked. I don't care, you know, what your income is, your race, ethnicity. Are you a Milwaukee County resident? Are you a legal immigrant? Who cares? We'll give you these harm reduction kits. We're not taking down your name or your number or anything like that. Same with our sheriff department now is working on it. A number of different law enforcement agencies, which is really changing the paradigm on this, that you can walk into a police station, ask for an antidote to overdosing, and they'll hand it to you. And they don't care who you are. They're not going to take down your name or check for warrants or anything like that. But these are the sort of harm reduction efforts that are really important, keeping in mind that every overdose death that we can avoid is an opportunity for someone to get into recovery.
So is that the same drug that recently either is going to be or is approved to be like over the counter at pharmacies?
That's right. That's right. Yep. So there have been programs in Wisconsin in particular to make this drug available in pharmacies without needing a prescription. But that approval from the FDA makes it much more broadly available. It could be in a grocery store now. It could be in a convenience store. It doesn't need to be dispensed by a pharmacy. It doesn't certainly need to have a prescription associated with it. So that's a big step.
That is a big step. And so that's more on the harm reduction side, as far as someone who's already using, who needs help not making sure that they don't overdose and don't die. As far as prevention strategies, what have you found to work, and what is working in Milwaukee right now?
Right. So that gets that. So we talked downstream. Downstream is you're already down the river. You're already, you know, taking opioids, or it's affecting your life. But upstream, before it happens, this gets into you know, what we've all heard of, the social determinants of health. So the things that determine your health status down the line. Now, a major one that we focus on in Milwaukee County is housing. So if somebody has unstable housing, they're much more likely to have a whole menu of adverse health outcomes. You can go from hypertension, high blood pressure, to cancer, to heart disease, to opioid use, to alcohol use in excess, things like that. So housing is one of the major determinants of health and one of the major upstream factors that we focus on in Milwaukee County. Now, the reason we focus on that is not just because it's an important health determinant, but also because there's incredible disparities nationally, but particularly in Milwaukee County when we look at housing. So, for example, if you look at Black individuals, 27% own their own home, 38% of Hispanic individuals. That jumps to 56% for white individuals. So you have huge disparities that exist there. But there are ways to overcome that. One is the Housing First Initiative in Milwaukee County. So this takes unsheltered or unhoused folks and can put them into long-term housing without precondition. And that last part is important. You don't have to have a job. You don't have to have an income. You don't have to prove this or that, because it's hard to do that before you have that stable housing. Yeah. Once you have that stable housing, it's a lot easier to keep a job. It's a lot easier to keep sustained income. So the Housing First Initiative has brought Milwaukee County down to the lowest unsheltered population in the country. A lot of folks don't know that. Milwaukee County has the lowest homeless or unsheltered population in the country. We're also, the county executive is working to build 120 homes in King Park, one of our most underserved neighborhoods, and it's going to sell those homes, working with Habitat for Humanity, going to sell those homes substantially below the cost of building those homes to try to get folks into this long-term housing. And then another example would be, it's not just in the city, it's working with the suburbs, the municipalities for affordable housing contracts there as well. So a lot of work going on in the housing space.
We're talking to Milwaukee County Chief Health Policy Advisor, Dr. Ben Weston, about opioid harm reduction, prevention strategies. And so you obviously work in Milwaukee County, but this show and Civic Media is statewide, and this is not a problem that just is in Milwaukee. And so as far as from what you know, and you may not know, be able to answer this, but I just thought I'd at least ask of, like, how do strategies, whether it's harm reduction or prevention, change from an urban setting to a rural setting? Is it apples and oranges, or is there some stuff that is can be applied universally?
A lot of the same stuff applies universally. And it's important to note, this is not, we talked about it being a national problem, a Milwaukee County problem, but I don't care what county you live in Wisconsin. The last full year of data for Wisconsin was 2021. 2022 is still being counted. That's the same in Milwaukee County. The processing of the toxicology data, the drug data, takes a long time. But in Wisconsin, there were 1,427 folks who died of opioid overdose in 2021. So this is not a Milwaukee County problem. This is not a city of Milwaukee problem. It is all over the state that this has been having effects, and all different ages, all different races, ethnicities, income levels. It doesn't really matter. But the solutions largely overlap in a lot of ways. Whether it's the upstream solutions, talking about housing, talking about stable housing, even in our smaller counties, our rural counties in Wisconsin, there are a lot of issues with unstable housing in those communities. And certainly the harm reduction efforts. Naloxone works whether you are in the central part of the city of Milwaukee or you are as far up north in Wisconsin as you can get. Opioids are there, and naloxone works.
And Dr. Weston, like you said at the beginning of the segment with that recorded piece that we played, these are all people. These are all people with stories and relatives and families and hopefully people that love them. And they're not just to be thrown away.
That's right. That's right. You know, I get these reports every few days of the folks who've overdosed, specifically in Milwaukee County, and who've had overdose deaths. And the report includes, you know, name and age and address and things like this. And every once in a while, I did this for those 17 folks, I'll just look these folks up and try to learn a little something about them. I think without fail, it always surprises me, or not surprises me, but it's always moving, interesting in a sad way, to just read about their lives. And these are, you know, I mentioned in that recording that a lot of folks after this, you know, talked about all these junkies out there. It's such a problem, blah, blah, blah. But reading about these folks, I mean, they're just like anybody we know in our lives. You know, they own businesses, they have families, they have, you know, their favorite book that they've read, their favorite movie they've seen recently, their dog that they hang out with, all these different things. They're not just, you know, people, I don't know, whatever you have in your mind for a junkie. These are folks with lives, with jobs, with careers, who've, you know, gone down an unfortunate path and have a unfortunate disease that's affecting them.
So as far as anyone in the audience listening, as far as resources, if you know someone in your life is struggling, beyond the citywide, countywide, statewide programs that are getting that are out there, what is some of the stuff on an individual level that people should be aware of?
Well, there's a lot of resources out there. And I won't, you know, necessarily go reciting the phone number of this and the website of that. But I think,
well, if you send, if you email me back, I'll put it in our show notes so people can
absolutely
have it.
we'll do that. Yeah. I'm happy to send you all sorts of resources, but I think on a broad level, it's about reaching out to those folks, and letting them know that you're there. A lot of people with substance use disorder, it's not obvious to those around them. A lot of these people who pass away, it's a surprise to those around them that they've been struggling with this. It's not as outward as you might think. And so to people who are around you, who you think are struggling with isolation, with job loss, with you know, marital issues, family issues, whatever it may be, maybe they're struggling with substance use. Maybe they're struggling with depression. Maybe they're struggling with something else. But having you reach out, whether you're their family member, their neighbor, their coworker, their friend, I think can make a huge difference. And talking to them, you might discover something going on, and you can reach out and help them connect with resources.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Dr. Ben Weston is the Milwaukee County Chief Health Policy Advisor. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. We'll be back in a minute.
Don't put the blame on me. Don't put your blame on
one beer that stands out among the hundreds of beers that look alike in their brown and green bottles. That's Miller High Life in its clear, clean bottle. Because Miller makes it right, every glass of Miller High Life is always refreshing, satisfying, and really deep down good. Ask the man for Miller. For well over 115 years, it's been called the champagne of beers.
I mean, don't just destroy it. Someone would have drank that perfectly good champagne of beer if Europe wasn't so uppity about quote unquote champagne.
My, we're touchy.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And I don't know if you saw this, but, you know, it's only champagne if it comes from the Champagne region of France. Otherwise, it's just sparkling wine, or in this case, it's just lager. But Belgian customs officials recently destroyed 2,352 cans of Miller High Life that was destined for Germany at the request of the powerful Comité Champagne. I don't know if I said. Again, took lots of French lessons. Nothing stuck. But because it bore the brand's longtime slogan, Champagne of Beers. So the brand, which doesn't, like, so Miller High Life does not export to Europe, I guess, potentially for this reason. I don't know how much, like, Bud Light, Miller Light, and other American light beers get exported. I don't know how popular it is over there. It's probably it's one of those things, like, it's probably expensive over there, and you're like, why wouldn't I just get a Peroni?
Yeah.
Or a Heineken, or, you know, the local domestic beers
right
for in Europe that are light and whatever. But the brand, which doesn't export to Europe, they didn't object, but they did say, we invite our friends in Europe to the U.S. anytime to toast the high life together. Of course, we respect local restrictions around the world, around the word champagne, but we remain proud of Miller High Life, its nickname, and its Milwaukee, Wisconsin provenance.
Well, it calls it the champagne of beers.
I know, it's not calling it champagne.
Exactly. So they get to entirely own the word champagne?
Well, I told you that I had a friend who his father was he might be the lawyer of that group.
Oh, wow.
The Committee of Champagne or whatever the French pronunciation of it is, because they sued Apple. When Apple tried to, they had what is now rose gold for the colors of whatever Apple iPhone that you could pick your color. And one of the colors originally was called champagne. And then the Committee of Champagne sued Apple over that name. And they had to change it to rose gold instead of a champagne color. That's how protective they are over that brand.
Are you telling me that in paint swatch land, there is no paint swatch called champagne?
I don't know that to be true. I can't say, oh yes, definitively, I would put my life on it. There is no champagne color. But I know that is not an urban legend. That is my friend's dad who litigated that case.
Wow.
And won. And so they take it very seriously. I just want to know. So it was basically some German buyer who was exporting, who ordered 2,300 cans. I love it, the cans and not bottles, because Miller High Life is way better in a bottle.
In a bottle, absolutely.
But then the fact that they just had to destroy all of this beer before it could get to its final destination. And I also am curious of why the Belgians are taking up this fight on behalf of France.
They want a favor?
Like, if it's going to go through France, let them destroy it and be pretentious. Why are the Belgians doing this on their behalf?
They have aspirations somehow. There is a champagne bonfire paint.
Oh.
I don't know. This committee better get on it.
Better get on it.
Start cracking down on the champagne word.
Josh Ega just said on the YouTube Live, Dom Perignon, the high life of sparkling wine. That's a good one. But yeah, I thought that was, you know, Wisconsin in the wild. I do like Miller High Life.
I do too.
And it's a great slogan.
The champagne of beers. Never hurt anybody.
Except, well, I guess unless someone got hurt in destroying these cans. How do you think you go about destroying? Do you just open all of them and pour them out and then recycle the cans?
You would hope.
Because
they just put them in a big crusher?
I don't know. Because they were, I guess, the Belgian officials were very adamant that they said, we did this in a very eco-friendly manner. Because, of course, they had to make sure they weren't, I don't know, littering.
Well, and don't tell me that some of those guys didn't take a six-pack or two home.
Fair.
Because they just wanted to try it.
Maybe more.
Yeah. I mean,
perks of the job. Perks,
exactly. We confiscated it, then now we get to keep it.
But I feel like we talked about champagne. Oh, no, you know what it was? It was a kind of cheese. There was a kind of cheese that recently in U.S. patent courts, they said that you could keep using the name even if the cheese didn't come from that region, but it wasn't. It was from a Swiss. Now I can't remember what it was, but I remember we talked about that once, and it was like the opposite, where the U.S. was like, "No, that doesn't hold here. You can call it whatever you want."
Yeah, we're not playing that game. Nice try.
We're not as protective over our regions, but this is a very like, and maybe this is why the Belgian officials held it up, because I think it is like an EU standard thing that they take this
very seriously. Twitchy French.
Twitchy French. All right. Well, when we come back during the No Sour, haha, fun time, power hour, we asked on Friday ahead of Earth Day what you are currently doing to be eco-friendly. And we had kind of alluded to what a lot of us, I think actually Jon Stewart's newest episode is about the recycling and what a hoax it is. But that doesn't mean that all is lost when it comes to recycling. It's just plastic. So I found this Washington Post quiz on rules of recycling.
Oh, excellent.
So I thought we would start off with that. And then Jake Brandt, who is the Director of Marketing and Communications for Habitat for Humanity, is here to talk about a piece that raised a lot more money than expected. It was like, what was it supposed to go for?
It was supposed to go for between $25,000 and $35,000. I'm going to make you wait, though, to tell you how much it went for.
Yes.
This is a great, great thing.
And then at 1:30, we're going to talk about if you did higher education, whether it was 2 years, 4 years, what was your major or what was your focus, and what do you do for a living now? Because we're going to talk about the hottest majors at UW-Madison. And I'm just curious, as far as for any of us, what did you decide to study? And are you or are you not using any of that information today? But so big fun hour, no sour, haha, fun time hour. When we come back, this is As Goes Wisconsin.
Ce soir, demain, la semaine prochaine. N'importe quand. C'est bon. Si bon. Il sera très crazy, non? Voilà, c'était
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.